This past week, the American Civil Liberties Union released a cache of documents, copies of claims made by Iraqis and Afghans, asking for compensation from the U.S. military for civilian deaths, injuries, and property loss in war. The ACLU obtained them under a Freedom of Information Act, or FOIA, request. Anthony Romero, the ACLU's executive director, says the documents give us a window into the stories behind civilian tragedies.
In one instance, in February 2006, you had a couple of Iraqi fishermen who were on the Tigris River, and when he leaned over to turn off the engine of his boat, they tried to look unthreatening to the American helicopter overhead. And in the report, in the FOIA document, which is an exact quote, the quote, "They held up the fish in the air and shouted, 'Fish, fish,' to show us they meant no harm," said the Army report that was attached to the claim. And yet, apparently, the Army was really quite confused and shot the man.
A Pentagon spokeswoman says the U.S. government has so far paid $31.6 million for loss of life, injury, and property to civilians in Iraq. These payments are made at the discretion of commanders and of military lawyers like John Tracy, who adjudicated nearly 2,000 claims in Iraq in 2003 and 2004.
I have the records of my time in Baghdad, and I paid 53 salacia payments, or condolence payments, rather, during my time in Baghdad. I should mention that the 52, or the 53 rather, is not the total amount of people that actually filed claims. There was substantially more individuals who came in my office that filed claims that were valid, that I knew were valid, but I couldn't pay. Because of the rules associated with the funding, I didn't always have week to week enough money to pay all of the valid claims. So these are just the ones that I did have money for and were approved by the commander. One sort of claim that I saw a lot of towards the beginning of the conflict were injuries to children. I had one injury to an adult caused by cluster munitions that had been used extensively during the campaign through Iraq. And I remember one claim where the gentleman had filed, and all three of his children were injured by the cluster munition. And they had been playing out in their field on the 13th of August in 03. They saw the object. They you know, were attracted to it. Went near it, picked it up or touched it, and it detonated. And one of the boys had his arm blown off. The girl had extensive burns on one side of her body, and the other boy had his eye shot out. And so I was able to pay $3,000 for the injuries to his children.
The claims submitted to the Army show that many accidental shootings occur at traffic control points, also known as TCPs. Major Anne Edgecombe, a Pentagon spokeswoman, acknowledges that there's been a learning curve.
And just one example is that when we started out, often Iraqi civilians would not be stopping at the traffic control points because they didn't know they needed to stop. And one of the reasons they didn't know is the signs weren't in Arabic. So that was a simple thing that we needed to change, that we did change immediately, so that they would know, oh, they need to, they can read the sign. It's in their language.
But TCPs are also danger points for American personnel. So commanders are asking advice from soldiers who've had to man them. One of them is Staff Sergeant James Hudspeth. Last October, he lost part of a leg in Ramadi when he stepped on an IED. He's currently recuperating at Walter Reed Army Hospital. We caught up with him at a restaurant nearby.
You have to pretty much treat every single Iraqi as a potential threat because you don't know who the insurgent is. And by the time you notice, like, say, a V-bid, it's too late.
A vehicle-borne improvised explosive device, a V-bid.
Yeah. By the time you notice it, it's because they're detonated on you. Everybody will preach you have, like, 14 seconds, and the reality is you have about 2 seconds to go through this escalation of force and to actually make the decision whether to kill or, you know, die. So every time a civilian gets killed, it launches a huge investigation. Usually a soldier's career's ended or whatever. And a lot of soldiers are so terrified about getting in trouble that they don't pull the trigger. And the whole time I've been in Iraq, both times, we've only been able to stop 2 V-bids. All the rest made it to their targets and killed the soldiers or wounded the soldiers at the location.
Tell me about that. You say that in a perfect world, you would have an arc of 14 seconds.
but that you rarely have that much time to make a snap and deadly decision.
Roger. You can't make... I know they might think that we're, like, you know, expert shots, and a lot of us are, but yeah, there's a limit to it. You know, you got the heat, you got your heart pumping, but a lot of the weapons that we're firing, they're machine guns. When you have that adrenaline pumping and you have that split second, you don't have a chance to take this perfect, slow, calm aim on an engine block. You get the vehicle in the silhouette of your gun sights, and you hold down the trigger until it stops. And, you know, it's a perceived threat. It might not be a threat, but it's the perceived threat. So it's still fight or flight, still kicks in.
Have you ever shot someone in that kind of situation at a TCP?
No, I've fired warning shots. So, and we keep hearing that they want us to place the lives of civilians over our own, or at the cost of our own security, or at our own reaction time. And that's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
No.
But I believe that's part of the counterinsurgency strategy, that sometimes the civilian life does have to be placed ahead of your own.
We're not police. Like, it only takes one suicide bomber to take out an entire squad of, you know, American soldiers. And you got to weigh which is more valuable, that one Iraqi civilian or a squad, you know, seven or eight American soldiers. I would never place a civilian's life above that of my men. We all have our own families. We all want to come home. And unless you're actually there with us, you can't say anything about it.
You say that you yourself, fortunately, haven't pulled a trigger on some innocent person, but have you seen that happen?
Yeah, I have seen innocents getting shot. Right, and it's usually at TCPs, and it usually deals with either being close to a perceived threat, like a V-bed or a potential V-bed, or being the driver of a vehicle that doesn't have brakes or something like that, or they can't read the signs or whatever, and they barrel through the TCP, so we open up on them. Fortunately, the ones I saw weren't actually fatalities. They got wounded. We realized that, you know, what had happened. We grabbed them, we took them to our own aid station, and we had them medically treated. That's all we can do.
Right.
I mean, once it's done, it's done. It's not my fault he doesn't have brakes.
Mm-hmm.
It's not my fault he can't read. It's not my fault he doesn't yield to a green laser in the eyes or a spotlight, or he doesn't take heed when I shoot rounds across the hood of his car.
That was Staff Sergeant James Hudspeth. On June 1st, the Army will formally issue new recommendations for soldiers posted at traffic control points, but inevitably, it's war, and civilians will get hurt and killed. For that reason, Democratic Senator Patrick Leahy of Vermont is considering legislation to make the process for awarding compensation to civilian victims more consistent and predictable.